the fairy down, brushing his tunic with massive fingers. Now, final thing. Listening? Furious nods. I want a negotiator. Someone who can make decisions. Not some no-ranker who has to run off back to base after every demand. Understood?
Fine. That is, I'm sure it will be fine. Unfortunately, I am one of those non-rankers, so you see, I can't actually guarantee it will be fine.
Butler was sorely tempted to drop-kick this little fellow back to his camp. Very well, I understand. Just shut up. Grubb almost agreed. Then he clamped his mouth shut and nodded. Good. Now, before you go, collect all weapons and helmets and make a little pile right there. Grubb took a deep breath.
Oh, well, may as well go out a hero. I can't do that.
Oh, really? And why not? Grubb drew himself up to his full height.
An LEP officer never relinquishes his weapon.
Butler nodded. Fair enough. Thought I'd ask. Off you go, then. Hardly able to believe his luck, Grubb scurried back towards the command tower. He was the last fairy standing. Trouble was snoring in the gravel, but he, Grubb Kelp, had faced down the mud monster. Wait until Mummy heard about this. Holly sat on the edge of her bed, fingers curled around the metal base. She lifted slowly, taking the weight on her arms. The strain threatened to pop her elbows from their sockets. She held it for a second and then slammed the frame into the concrete. A satisfying cloud of dust and splinters swirled around her knees.
Good, she grunted.
Holly eyed the camera. Doubtless they were watching her. No time to waste. She flexed her fingers, repeating the maneuver again and again until the steel base left deep wheels in her finger joints. With each impact, more and more splinters popped from the fresh floor. After several moments, the cell door burst open and Juliet fell into the room.
What are you doing? She panted. Trying to knock the house down?
I'm hungry, shouted Holly, and I'm fed up waving at that stupid camera. Don't you feed your prisoners around here? I want some food.
Juliet's fingers curled into a fist. Artemis had warned her to be civil, but there was a limit.
No need to get your neck, or whatever, in a twist.
So what do fairies eat?
Got any dolphin?
Holly asked sarcastically. Juliet shuddered.
No, I don't, you beast. Fruit, then. Or vegetables. Make sure they're washed. I don't want any of your chemical poisons in my blood.
Ha ha, you're right, you are. Don't worry, all our produce is grown naturally.
Juliet paused on her way to the door. And don't you go forgetting the rules. No trying to escape from the house, and there's no need to break up the furniture either. Don't make me demonstrate my fall, Nelson.
As soon as Juliet's footsteps had faded, Holly began smashing the bed into the concrete. That was the thing about fairy bonds. The instructions had to be given eye to eye, and they had to be very precise. Just saying there was no need to do a thing wasn't specifically forbidding an elf to do it. And another thing, Holly had no intention of escaping from the house. That wasn't to say she didn't mean to get out of her cell. Artemis had added yet another monitor to the bank. This one was linked to a camera in Angeline Fowle's attic room. He spared a moment to check on his mother. Sometimes it bothered him having a camera in her room. It seemed almost like spying. But it was for her own good. There was always the danger that she could hurt herself. At the moment she was sleeping peacefully, having swallowed the sleeping pill that Juliet had left on her tray. All part of the plan. A vital part, as it happened. Butler entered the control room. He was clutching a fistful of fairy hardware and rubbing his neck.
Checky little blighters.
Artemis looked up from the monitor bank.
Any problems?
Nothing major. These little battens pack quite a punch, though. How's our prisoner?
Fine. Juliet is getting her something to eat. I'm afraid Captain Short is going a bit stir-crazy.
On the screen, Holly was smashing her cot into the concrete.
That's understandable, noted the manservant. Imagine her frustration. It's not as if she can tunnel her way out.
Artemis smiled.
No. The entire estate is built on a bed of limestone. Not even a dwarf could tunnel his way out of here. Or in.
Wrong, as it happened. Dead wrong. A landmark moment for Artemis Fowle. The Leb had procedures for emergencies like this one. Admittedly, these did not include the retrieval squad getting hammered by a lone enemy. Still, That just made the next step all the more urgent, especially with the faintest of orange tinges creeping into the sky.
"Are we good to go?"
roared Root into his mic, as though it wasn't whisper-sensitive.
Good to go?
Thought Foley, busy wiring the last dish on a watchtower.
These military types and their catchphrases, good to go, and lock and load, I don't know, but I've been told. So insecure.
Aloud, he said,
No need to shout, Commander. His headsets could pick up a spider scratching in Madagascar.
And is there a spider scratching in Madagascar?
Well, I don't know. I can't really.
Well, stop changing the subject, Foley, and answer the question.
The centaur scowled. The commander took everything so literally. He plugged the dish's modem lead into his laptop.
Okay, we're, good to go.
About time, too. Right. Flip the switch.
For the third time in as many moments, Foley gritted his horsey teeth. He was indeed the stereotypical, unappreciated genius. Flick the switch, if you don't mind. Root didn't have the cranial capacity to appreciate what he was trying to do here. Stopping time wasn't just a matter of pressing the on button. There were a series of delicate procedures that had to be performed with utmost precision. Otherwise, the stop zone could end up as just so much ash and radioactive slop. While it was true that fairies had been stopping time for millennia, these days, with satellite communication and the internet, humans were liable to notice if a zone just dropped out of time for a couple of hours. There was an age when you could throw a blanket stoppage over a whole country and the mud people would simply think the gods were angry. But not anymore. Nowadays, the humans had instruments for measuring anything. So if there was any time stopping to be done, it had to be fine-tuned and precise. In the old days, five elfin warlocks would form a pentagram around the target and spread a magic shield over it, temporarily stopping time inside the enchanted enclosure. This was fine as far as it went, provided the warlocks didn't have to use the bathroom. Many a siege was lost because an elf had one glass of wine too many. Warlocks tire quickly, too, and their arms get sore. On a good day, you maybe had an hour and a half, which was hardly worth the trouble in the first place. It was Foley's idea to mechanize the whole procedure. He had the warlocks do their thing into lithium batteries, and then he set up a network of receiver dishes around the designated area. Sounds simple? Well, it wasn't. But there were definite advantages. For one thing, there were no more power surges. Batteries didn't try to show off to each other. You could calculate exactly how many power cells were needed, and sieges could be extended for up to 8 hours. As it happened, the Fowl Estate was the perfect location for a time stop, isolated with a definite boundary. It even had elevated towers for the dishes, for heaven's sake. It was almost as if Artemis Fowl wanted time stopped. Foley's finger hesitated over the button. Could it be possible? After all, the human youth had been one step ahead throughout this whole affair.
Commander?
Are we online yet?
Not exactly. There's something...
Root's reaction nearly blew out the woofers in Foley's earpiece.
No, Foley, there isn't something. None of your bright ideas, thank you very much. Captain Short's life is in danger, so push the button before I climb that tower and push it with your face.
Touchy, muttered Foley, and pushed the button. Lieutenant Cudgeon checked his moonometer.
You have 8 hours.
I know how much time I have, growled Root. And stop following me. Don't you have work to do?
Actually, now that you mention it, I have a bio-bombed arm.
Root rounded on him.
Don't annoy me, Lieutenant. Having you pass comments at every turn is not improving my concentration. Just do whatever it is you feel you have to do. But be prepared to back it up at tribunal. If one thing goes wrong, heads are gonna roll.
Indeed, muttered Cudgeon under his breath. But mine is not going to be one of them.
Root checked the sky. A shimmering azure field had descended over the Fowl Estate. Good. They were in limbo. Outside the walls, life continued at an exaggerated pace, but if anyone were to somehow gain access to the manor in spite of the fortified walls and high gate, they would find it deserted. All occupants trapped in the past. So, for the next 8 hours, it would be twilight on the Fowl Estate. After that, Root could not guarantee Holly's safety. Given the gravity of the situation, it was more than likely that Cudgeon would get the go-ahead to biobomb the whole place. Root had seen a blue rinse before. No living thing escaped. Not even the rats. Root caught up with Foley at the base of the North Tower. The Centaur had parked a shuttle by the meter-thick wall. Already the work area was a mess of tangled wires and pulsating fiber optics.
Foley, are you in here?
The Centaur's foil-capped head emerged from the belly of a disemboweled hard drive.
Over here, Commander. You've come to push a button with my face, I presume.
Root almost laughed.
Don't tell me you're looking for an apology, Foley. I've already used my quota for today, and that's to a lifelong friend.
Cudgeon?
Forgive me, Commander, but I wouldn't waste my apologies on the Lieutenant. He won't be wasting any on you when he stabs you in the back.
You're wrong about him. Cudgeon is a good officer. A bit eager, certainly. But he'll do the right thing when the time comes.
The right thing for himself, maybe. I don't think Holly's at the top of his priority list. Root didn't answer. He couldn't.
And another thing, I have a sneaking suspicion that young Artemis Fowl wanted us to stop time.
After all, everything else we've tried has played straight into his hands. Root rubbed his temples.
That's impossible. How could a human know about time stoppage? Anyway, this is no time for theorizing, Foley. I have less than 8 hours to clean up this mess. So what do you got for me?
Foley clopped over to an equipment rack, clamped to the wall.
No heavy armament, that's for sure. Not after what happened to Retrieval 1. No helmet, either. That beast of a madman seems to collect them. No, to show good faith, we're going to send you in unarmed and unarmored.
Root snorted.
What manual did you get this from?
It's standard operating procedure. Fostering trust speeds communication.
Ah, stop quoting him. Give me something to shoot.
Suit yourself, sighed Foley, selecting what looked like a finger from the rack.
What's that?
It's a finger. What does it look like?
Well, a finger, admitted Root.
Yes, but not an ordinary finger. He glanced around to make sure that no one else was watching. The tip contains a pressurized dart. One shot only. You tap the knuckle with your thumb, and someone goes sleepy by.
Why haven't I seen this before?
It's a covert kind of thing.
And?
Said Root suspiciously.
Well, there have been accidents.
Tell me, Foley.
Our agents keep forgetting they have it on.
Meaning they shoot themselves?
Foley nodded miserably. One of our best sprites was picking his nose at the time. 3 days on the critical list. Root rolled the memory latex onto his index finger, where it immediately assumed the shape and flesh tone of the host digit.
Don't worry, Foley. I'm not a complete idiot. Anything else?
Foley unhooked what appeared to be a false bottom from the equipment rack.
You're not serious. What does that do?
Nothing, admitted the Centaur. But it gets a great laugh at parties. Root chuckled.
Twice. That was a major lapse for him. Okay, levity over. Are you going to wire me?
Naturally. One iris cam. What colour? He peered into the commander's eyes.
Mud brown.
He selected a small vial from the shelf and removed the electronic contact lens from a fluid capsule. Plucking Root's eyelid with thumb and forefinger, he slotted in the iris cam. That might irritate you. Try not to rub it or it could end up in the back of your eye. Then we'd be looking into your head, and there's nothing interested in there, heaven knows. Root blinked, resisting the urge to knead his watering eye.
That's it?
Foley nodded.
That's all we dare risk.
The commander agreed reluctantly. His hip felt very light without a tri-barreled blaster dangling from it.
Okay. I suppose this amazing dart finger will have to do. Honestly, Foley, if this blows up in my face, you'll be on the next shuttle back to Haven.
The Centaur snickered.
Just be careful in the toilet.
Root didn't laugh. There were some things you didn't joke about. Artemis's watch had stopped. It was as though Greenwich wasn't there anymore. Or perhaps, mused Artemis, we're the ones who have disappeared. He checked CNN. It had frozen. A picture of Riz Khan jittered slightly on the screen. Artemis could not hold back a satisfied smile. They had done it. Just like the book said. The LEP had stopped time, all according to plan. Time to check out a theory. Artemis wheeled over to the monitor bank and punched up the MAM cam on the 70-centimeter main monitor. Angeline Fowl was no longer on the chaise longue. Artemis panned around the room. It was empty. His mother had gone. Disappeared. His smile widened. Perfect. Just as he'd suspected. Artemis switched his attention to Holly Short.
She was banging the bed again. Occasionally, she would rise from the mattress, pounding the wall with her bare fists. Maybe it was more than frustration. Could there be a method in her madness? He tapped the monitor with a slim finger.
What are you up to, Captain? What's your little plan?
He was distracted by a movement on the Avenue monitor.
At last, he breathed, the games begin.
A figure was advancing down the Avenue, small but imposing nonetheless. Unshielded, too. Finished play-acting, then. Artemis punched the intercom button.
Butler, we have a guest. I'll show him in. You get back here and police the surveillance cameras.
Butler's voice came back tinny through the speaker.
10-4, Artemis. On my way.
Artemis buttoned his designer jacket, pausing at the mirror to straighten his tie. The trick to negotiation was to hold all the cards going in and, even if you didn't, to try to look as though you did. Artemis put on his best sinister face.
Evil, he told himself. Evil, but highly intelligent. And determined. Don't forget determined.
He put a hand on the doorknob.
Steady now. Deep breaths, and try not to think about the possibility that you have misjudged this situation and are about to be shot dead. 1, 2, 3.
He opened the door.
Good evening, he said,
every inch the gracious host, albeit a sinister, evil, intelligent, and determined one. Root stood on the doorstep, palms up, the universal gesture for, look, I'm not carrying a big murderous weapon.
You're Fowl?
Artemis Fowl, at your service. And you are?
Lep Commander Root. Right, we know each other's names, so could we get on with this?
Certainly.
Root decided to chance his arm.
Step outside, then, where I can see you.
Artemis's face hardened.
Have you learned nothing from my demonstrations? The ship? Your commandos? Do I need to kill someone?
No, said Root hurriedly.
You only meant to lure me outside, where I could be snatched and used to trade. Please, Commander Root, raise your game or send someone intelligent.
Root felt the blood pump through his cheeks.
Now you just listen to me, you young...
Artemis smiled, in command again.
Not very good negotiation techniques, Commander, to lose your cool before we even get to the table.
Root took several deep breaths.
Fine, whatever you say. Where would you prefer to conduct our talks?
Well, inside, of course. You have my permission to enter, but remember, Captain Short's life is in your hands. Be careful with it.
Root followed his host down the vaulted hallway. Generations of fowls glared down at him from classical portraits. They passed through a stained oak doorway to a long conference room. There were two places set at a round table, complete with pads, ashtrays, and water jugs. Root was delighted to see the ashtrays, and immediately pulled a half-chewed cigar from his vest.
Maybe you're not such a barbarian after all, he grunted, exhaling a huge cloud of green smoke.
The commander ignored the water jugs, instead pouring himself a shot of something purple from a hip flask. He drank deeply, belched, and sat.
Ready?
Artemis shuffled his notes, like a newsreader.
Here's the situation as I see it. I have the means to expose your subterranean existence, and you are powerless to stop me. So, basically, whatever I ask for is a small price to pay.
Root spat out a shred of fungus tobacco.
You think you can just put all this information out over the internet?
Well, not immediately. Not with the time stop in effect. Root choked on a lungful of smoke.
Their ace in the hole rumbled.
Well, if you know about the time stop, you must also know that you are completely cut off from the outside world. You are, in effect, powerless.
Artemis jotted a note on the pad.
Let's save some time here. I grow weary of your clumsy bluffs. In the case of an abduction, the LEP will first send a crack retrieval team to get back what has been lost. You have done so. Excuse me while I titter. Crack team, honestly. A Cub Scout patrol armed with water pistols could have defeated them.
Root fumed silently, taking out his anger on the cigar butt.
The next official step is negotiation. And finally, when the 8 hours time limit is about to run out, and if no solution can be reached, a biobomb is detonated, contained by the time field.
You appear to know an awful lot about us, Master Fowl. I don't suppose you'll tell me how.
Correct.
Root mashed the remains of his cigar into the crystal ashtray.
So let's have it. What are your demands?
One demand. Singular. Artemis slid his notepad across the polished table. Root read what was written there.
1 ton of 24-karat gold? Small, unmarked ingots only. You can't be serious.
Oh, but I am.
Root sat forward in his chair.
Don't you see? Your position is untenable. Either you give us back Captain Short, or we will be forced to kill you all. There is no middle ground. We don't negotiate. Not really. I'm just here to explain the facts to you.
Artemis smiled his vampire smile. Oh, but you will negotiate with me, Commander.
Oh, really? What makes you so special?
I am special. Because I know how to escape the time field.
Impossible, snorted Root. Can't be done.
Oh, yes, it can. Trust me, I haven't been wrong yet.
Root tore off the top page, folding it into his pocket.
I have to think about this.
Take your time. We have 8 hours. Excuse me, 7.5 hours. Then time's up for everybody.
Root said nothing for a long while, tapping his nails on the tabletop. He took a deep breath to speak, then changed his mind and stood abruptly.
We'll be in touch. Don't worry, I'll see myself out.
Artemis pushed his chair back.
You do that. But remember this, none of your race has permission to enter here while I'm alive.
Root stalked down the hallway, glaring back at the oil paintings. Better to leave now and process this new information. The foul boy was indeed a slippery opponent, but he was making one basic mistake, the assumption that Root would play by the rules. However, Julius Root hadn't got his commander's bars by following any rulebook. Time for a bit of unorthodox action. The videotape from Root's iris cam was being reviewed by experts.
You see there?
Said Professor Cumulus, a behavioral specialist.
That twitch! He's lying!
Nonsense,
huffed Dr. Argon, a psychologist from below the United States.
He's itchy, that's all. He's itchy so he scratches. Nothing sinister in that.
Cumulus turned to Foley.
Listen to him. How can I be expected to work with this charlatan?
Witch doctor,
countered Argon. Foley raised his hairy palms.
Gentlemen, please, we need agreement here, a concrete profile.
It's no use, said Argon. I can't work in these conditions.
Cumulus folded his arms.
If he can't work, neither can I.
Root strode through the shuttle double doors. His trademark purple complexion was even rosier than usual.
That human is toying with us. I will not have it. Now, what did our experts make of the tape?
Foley moved slightly to the side, allowing the commander a clear run at the so-called experts.
Apparently they can't work in these conditions.
Root's eyes narrowed to slits, bringing his prey into sharp focus.
Excuse me.
The good doctor is a half-wit,
said Cumulus, unfamiliar with the commander's temper.
I'm a half-wit,
stuttered Argon, equally ignorant.
What about you, you cave fairy? Plastering your absurd interpretations on the most innocent of gestures. Innocent? The boy is a bag of nerves, obviously lying. It's textbook.
Root slammed a clenched fist onto the table, sending a spider's web of cracks scurrying across the surface.
Silence!
And silence there was. Instantly.
Now, you two experts are on handsome retainers for your profiling work, correct?
The pair nodded, afraid to speak in case that broke the silence rule.
This is probably the case of your lives, so I want you to concentrate very hard, understood?
More nods. Root popped the camera out of his weeping eye.
Fast-forwarded, Foley, towards the end.
The tape hopped forward erratically. On screen, Root followed the human into his conference room.
There, stop it there. Can you zoom in on his face?
Can I zoom in on his face? Snorted Foley. Can a dwarf steal a web from under a spider?
Yes,
replied Root.
That was a rhetorical question, actually.
I don't need a grammar lesson, Foley. Just zoom in, would you?
Foley ground his tombstone teeth.
Okay, boss, will do.
The centaur's fingers prodded the keyboard with lightning speed. Artemis's visage grew to fill the plasma screen.
I advise you to listen,
said Root, squeezing the expert's shoulders.
This is a pivotal moment in your careers.
I am special, said the voice on the screen, because I know how to escape the time field.
Now tell me, said Root, is he lying?
Run it again, said Cumulus. Show me the eyes.
Argon nodded. Yeah, just the eyes. Foley tapped a few more keys, and Artemis's deep blue eyes expanded to the width of the screen.
I am special, boomed the human voice, because I know how to escape the time field.
Well, is he lying?
Cumulus and Argon looked at each other, all traces of antagonism gone. No, they said simultaneously.
He's telling the truth, added the behaviorist.
Or, clarified the psychologist, at least he thinks he is.
Root swabbed his eye with a cleansing solution.
That's what I thought. When I looked that human in the face, I figured he was either a genius or crazy.
Artemis's cool eyes glared at them from the screen.
So which is it? Asked Foley. A genius or crazy?
Root grabbed his tri-barreled blaster from the gun rack.
What's the difference? He snapped, strapping his trusty weapon to his hip. Get me an outside line to E1. This foul person seems to know all of our rules, so it's time to break a few.
Chapter 7. Mulch. Time to introduce a new character to our otherworldly pageant. Well, not strictly speaking a new character. We have encountered him before, in the LEP booking line, on remand for numerous larcenies. Mulch Diggums, the kleptomaniac dwarf. A dubious individual, even by Artemis Fowl's standards. As if this account didn't already suffer from an overdose of amoral individuals. Born to a typical dwarf cavern-dwelling family, Mulch decided early that mining was not for him, and resolved to put his talents to another use, namely, digging and entering. Generally entering mud people's property. Of course, this meant forfeiting his magic. Dwellings were sacred. If you broke that rule, you had to be prepared to accept the consequences. Mulch didn't mind. He didn't much care for magic anyway. There'd never been much use for it down the mines. Things had gone pretty well for a few centuries, and he'd built up quite a lucrative above-ground memorabilia business. That was until he tried to sell the Jules Rimet Cup to an undercover LEP operative. From then on, his luck had turned, and he'd been arrested over 20 times to date. A total of 300 years in and out of prison. Mulch had a prodigious appetite for tunnelling, and that, unfortunately, is a literal translation. For those unfamiliar with the mechanics of dwarf tunnelling, I shall endeavour to explain them as tastefully as possible. Like some members of the reptile family, dwarf males can unhinge their jaws, allowing them to ingest several kilos of earth a second. This material is processed by a super-efficient metabolism, stripped of any useful minerals and ejected at the other end, as it were. Charming. At present, Mulch was languishing in a stone-walled cell in LEP Central. At least, he was trying to project an image of a languishing, unperturbed kind of dwarf. Actually, he was quaking in his steel toe-capped boots. The goblin-dwarf turf war was flaring up at the moment, and some bright spark LEP elf had seen fit to put him in a cell with a gang of psyched-up goblins. An oversight, perhaps. More likely a spot of revenge for trying to pick his arresting officer's pocket in the booking line.
So, dwarf, sneered the head honcho goblin, a wart-faced fellow covered in tattoos. How come you don't chew your way out of here?
Mulch rapped on the walls.
Solid rock.
The goblin laughed.
So what? Can't be any harder than your dwarf skull.
His cronies laughed. So did Mulch. He thought it might be wise.
Wrong. You laughing at me, dwarf?
Mulch stopped laughing.
With you, he corrected. I'm laughing with you. That skull joke was pretty funny.
The goblin advanced until his slimy nose was a centimeter from Mulch's own.
You patronizing me, dwarf?
Mulch swallowed, calculating. If he unhinged now, he could probably swallow the leader before the others reacted. Still, goblins were murder on the digestion. Very bony. The goblin conjured up a fireball around his fist.
I asked you a question, Stumpy.
Mulch could feel every sweat gland on his body pop into instant overdrive. Dwarfs did not like fire. They didn't even like thinking about flames. Unlike the rest of the fairy races, dwarves had no desire to live above ground, too close to the sun. Ironic for someone in the mud people possession liberation business.
No need for that, he stammered. I was just trying to be friendly.
Friendly? Scoffed Wartface. Your kind don't know the meaning of the word. Cowardly backstabbers, the lot of you.
Mulch nodded diplomatically.
We have been known to be a bit treacherous.
A bit treacherous? My brother Flam was ambushed by a crowd of dwarfs disguised as dung heaps. He's still in traction.
Mulch nodded sympathetically.
The old dung heap ruse. Disgraceful. One of the reasons I don't associate with the Brotherhood.
Wartface twirled the fireball between his fingers.
Now, there are two things under this world that I really despise.
Mulch had a feeling that he was about to find out what they were.
One is a stinking dwarf.
No surprises there.
And the other is a traitor to his own kind, and from what I hear, you fall neatly into both categories.
Mulch smiled weakly. Just my luck.
Luck ain't got nothing to do with it. Fortune delivered you into my hands.
On another day, Mulch might have pointed out that luck and fortune were basically the same thing. Not today.
You like fire, dwarf?
Mulch shook his head. Wartface grinned.
Now ain't that a shame, 'cause any second now I'm gonna ram this here fireball down your throat.
The dwarf swallowed dryly. Wasn't it just typical of the dwarf brotherhood? What do dwarves hate? Fire. Who are the only creatures with the ability to conjure fireballs? Goblins. So who did the dwarves pick a fight with? What a real no-brainer. Mulch backed up to the wall.
Careful there. We could all go up.
Not us, grinned Wartface, snorting the fireball up two elongated nostrils. Completely fireproof.
Mulch was perfectly aware what would happen next. He had seen it too many times in the back alleys. A group of goblins would corner a stray brother dwarf, pin him down, and then the leader would give him the double barrel straight in the face. Wartface's nostrils quivered as he prepared to vent the inhaled fireball. Mulch quailed. There was only one chance. The goblins had made a basic mistake. They'd forgotten to pin his arms. The goblin drew a breath through his mouth, then closed it. More exhalation pressure for the fire stream. He tilted his head back, pointing his nose at the dwarf, and let fly. Quick as a flash, Mulch jammed his thumbs up Wartface's nostrils. Disgusting, yes, but definitely better than being dwarf kebab. The fireball had nowhere to go. It rebounded on the balls of Mulch's thumbs and ricocheted back into the goblin's head. The tear ducts provided the path of least resistance, so the flames compressed into pressurized streams, erupting just below the goblin's eyes. A stream of flame spread across the cell roof. Mulch withdrew his thumbs and, after a quick wipe, thrust them in his mouth, allowing the natural balm in his saliva to begin the healing process. Of course, if he'd still had his magic, he could have just wished the scorched digits better, but that was the price you paid for a life of crime. Wartface didn't look so good. Smoke was leaking from every orifice in his head. Flameproof goblins may be, but the errant fireball had given his tubes a good scouring. He swayed like a strand of seaweed, then collapsed face down on the concrete floor. Something crunched, probably a big goblin nose. The other gang members did not react favorably.
Look what he did to the boss, that stinking stump. Let's fry him.
Mulch backed up even further. He'd been hoping the remaining goblins would lose their nerve once their leader was out of commission. Apparently not. Even though it was most definitely not in his nature, Mulch had no option but to attack. He unhinged his jaw and leapt forward, clamping his teeth around the foremost goblin's head.
Hello, back off!
He shouted around the obstruction in his mouth.
Back off, or your home get hit!
The others froze, uncertain of their next move. Of course, they'd all seen what dwarf molars could do to a goblin head. Not a pretty sight. Each one popped a fireball in his fist.
Oh,
you can't get us all, Stumpy!
Mulch resisted the impulse to bite down. It is the strongest of dwarf urges, a genetic memory born from millennia spent tunneling. The fact that the goblin was wriggling slimily didn't help. His options were running out. The gang was advancing and he was powerless as long as his mouth was full. It was crunch time. Pardon the pun.
Suddenly the cell door clanked open, and what seemed like an entire squadron of LEP officers flooded the confined space. Mulch felt the cold steel of a gun barrel against his temple.
"Spit out a prisoner," ordered a voice.
Mulch was delighted to comply. A thoroughly slimed goblin collapsed, retching on the floor.
"You goblins, put 'em out!"
One by one, the fireballs were extinguished.
"That's not my fault," whined Mulch, pointing to the spasming wart face. "He blew himself up."
The officer holstered his weapon, drawing out a set of cuffs.
"I couldn't care less what you do to each other,"
he said, spinning Mulch and snapping the cuffs on. "If it was up to me, I'd put the whole lot of you in a big room and come back a week later to sluice it out. But Commander Root wants to see you above ground ASAP.
ASAP?
Now, if not sooner. Mulch knew Root. The commander was responsible for several of his government hotel visits. If Julius wanted to see him, it probably wasn't for drinks and a movie.
"Now? But it's daylight now, I'll burn."
The LEP officer laughed.
"It ain't daylight where you're going, pal. Where you're going, it ain't anything."
Root was waiting for the dwarf inside the time field portal. The portal was yet another of Foley's inventions. Fairies could be introduced to, and leave, the time field without affecting the altered flow inside the field. This effectively meant that even though it took nearly 6 hours to get Mulch to the surface, he was injected into the field only moments after Root had the notion to send for him. It was Mulch's first time in a field. He stood watching life proceed at an exaggerated rate outside the shimmering corona. Cars zipped by at impossible speeds, and clouds tumbled across the skyline as though driven by Force 10 gales.
"Mulch, you little reprobate," roared Root. "You can take off that suit now. The field is UV-filtered, or so I'm told."
The dwarf had been issued a blackout suit at E1. Even though dwarves had thick skins, they were extremely sensitive to sunlight, and had a burn time of less than 3 minutes. Mulch peeled off the skin-tight suit.
"Nice to see you, Julius."
"That's Commander Root to you."
"Commander now? I heard that. Clerical error, was it?"
Root's teeth ground his cigar to a pulp.
"I don't have time for this impudence, convict. And the only reason that my boot is not up your behind right now is that I have a job for you."
Mulch frowned.
"Convict? I have a name, you know, Julius."
Root squatted to the dwarf's level.
"I don't know what dream world you live in, convict, but in the real world you are a criminal, and it is my job to ensure that your life is as unpleasant as possible. So if you're expecting civility, just because I've testified against you some 15 times, forget it."
Mulch rubbed his wrists where the handcuffs had left red welts.
"Fine, Commander. No need to blow a gasket. I'm not a murderer, you know, just a petty criminal."
"From what I hear, you nearly made the transformation below in the cells."
"Not my fault, they attacked me."
Root screwed a fresh cigar into his mouth.
"Fine, whatever. Just follow me and don't steal anything."
"Yes, sir, Commander,"
said Mulch innocently. He didn't need to steal anything else. He'd already palmed Root's field access card when the commander had made the mistake of leaning over. They crossed the retrieval perimeter to the avenue.
"Do you see that manor?"
"What manor?"
Root rounded on him.
"I don't have time for this, convict. Nearly half my time stop has elapsed. Another few hours and one of my best officers will be blue-rinsed."
Mulch shrugged.
"None of my concern. I'm just a criminal, remember? And by the way, I know what you want me to do. The answer's no."
"I haven't even asked you yet."
"It's obvious. I'm a housebreaker. That's a house. You can't go in because you'll lose your magic. But my magic's already gone. 2 and 2.
Root spat out the cigar.
"Don't you have any civic pride? Our entire way of life is on the line here."
"Not my way of life. Fairy prison, human prison. It's all the same to me."
The commander thought about it.
"Okay, you slime. 50 years off your sentence."
"I want amnesty."
"In your dreams, Mulch."
"Take it or leave it."
75 years in minimum security. You take it or leave it."
Mulch pretended to think. It was all academic, seeing as he intended escaping anyway.
"Single cell?"
Yes, yes, single cell. Now, will you do it?
Very well, Julius. Only because it's you.
Foley was searching for a matching iris cam.
Hazel, I think. Or perhaps tawny. You really do have stunning eyes, Mr. Mulch.
Thank you, Foley. My mother always said they were my most attractive feature.
Root was pacing the shuttle floor.
You two do realize we're on a deadline here, don't you? Never mind matching the color, just give him a camera.
Foley plucked a lens from its solution with tweezers.
This is not just vanity, Commander. The closer the match, the less interference from the actual eye.
Whatever, whatever, just get on with it.
Foley grabbed Mulch's chin, holding him still.
There you are.
We're with you all the way.
Foley twisted a tiny cylinder into the thick tufts of hair growing from Mulch's ear. Wired for sound now, too, in case you need a call for assistance. The dwarf smiled wryly. Well, forgive me for not swelling with confidence. I find I've always done better on my own.
If you can call 17 convictions doing better, chuckled Root.
Oh, we have time for jokes now, do we?
Root grabbed him by the shoulder.
You're right, we don't. Let's go.
He dragged Mulch across a grassy verge to a cluster of cherry trees.
I want you to tunnel in there and find out how this foul person knows so much about us. Probably some surveillance device. Whatever it is, destroy it. Find Captain Short, if possible, and see what you can do for her. If she is dead, at least it will clear the way for a biobomb.
Mulch squinted across the landscape.
I don't like it.
What don't you like?
The lie of the land. I smell limestone. Solid rock foundation. There may not be a way in.
Foley trotted across.
I've done a scan. The original structure is based totally on rock, but some of the later extensions stray onto clay. The wine cellar in the south wing appears to have a wooden floor. It should be no problem for someone with a mouth like yours.
Mulch decided to take that as a statement of fact rather than an insult. He opened the bum flap on his tunnelling trousers.
Right. Stand back.
Root and the surrounding LEP officers rushed for cover. But Foley, who had never actually seen a dwarf tunnelling, decided to stay for a peek.
Good luck, Mulch.
The dwarf unhinged his jaw.
Uncle!
He mumbled, bending over for launch. The centaur looked around.
Where's everyone?
He never finished that statement, because a blob of recently swallowed and even more recently recycled clay whacked him in the face. By the time he'd cleared his eyes, Mulch had disappeared down a vibrating hole, and there was the sound of hearty laughter shaking the cherry trees. Mulch followed a loamy vein through a volcanic fold in the rock. Nice consistency. Not too many loose stones. Plenty of insect life, too. Vital for strong, healthy teeth. A dwarf's most important attribute. The first thing a prospective mate looked at. Mulch went low to the limestone, his belly almost scraping the rock. The deeper the tunnel, the less chance of subsidence on the surface. You couldn't be too careful these days, not with motion sensors and landmines. Mud people went to extraordinary lengths to protect their valuables. With good reason, as it happened. Mulch felt a vibration cluster to his left. Rabbits. The dwarf fixed the location in his internal compass, always useful to know where the local wildlife hung out. He skirted the warren, following the manor foundations around in a long, northwesterly loop. Wine cellars were easy to locate. Over the centuries, residue seeped through the floor, infusing the land beneath with the wine's personality. This one was somber, nothing cheeky here. A touch of fruit, but not enough to lighten the flavour. Definitely an occasion wine on the bottom rack. Mulch burped. That was good clay. The dwarf aimed his scything jaws skywards, punching through the floorboards. He hauled himself through the jagged hole, shaking the last of the recycled mud from his trousers. He was in a blessedly dark room, perfect for dwarf vision. His sonar had guided him to an uncovered spot in the floor. 1 meter to the left, and he would have emerged in a huge barrel of Italian red. Mulch rehinged his jaw and padded across to the wall. He flattened a conch-like ear to the red brickwork. For a moment he was absolutely still, absorbing the house's vibrations. A lot of low-frequency humming. There was a generator somewhere, and plenty of juice running through the wires.
Footsteps, too. Way up, maybe on the third floor. And close by, a crashing sound, metal on concrete. There it was again. Someone was building something. Or breaking something down. Something skittered past his foot. Mulch squashed it instinctively. It was a spider. Just a spider. Sorry, little friend, he said to the grey smear. I'm a bit on the jittery side. The steps were wooden, of course. More than a century old by the smell of them. Steps like that creaked as soon as you looked at them. Better than any pressure pads for giving away intruders. Mulch climbed along the edges, one foot in front of the other. Right in by the wall was where the wood had most support, and was less likely to creak. This was not as simple as it sounds. Dwarf feet are designed for spade work, not for the delicate intricacies of ballet dancing or balancing on wooden steps. Nonetheless, Mulch reached the door without incident. A couple of minor squeaks, but nothing that would be detectable by human ears or hardware. The door was locked, naturally, but it may as well not have been for all the challenge it presented to a kleptomaniac dwarf. Mulch reached into his beard, plucking out a sturdy hair. Dwarf hair is radically different from the human variety. Mulch's beard and head hair were actually a matrix of antennae that helped him to navigate and avoid danger below ground. Once removed from its paw, the hair immediately stiffened in rapid rigor mortis. Mulch twisted the end in the seconds before it became completely rigid. A perfect pick. One quick jiggle and the lock yielded. Only two tumblers. Terrible security. Typical of humans. They never expected an attack from below. Mulch stepped onto a parquet corridor. The whole place smelled of money. He could make a fortune here. If only he had the time. There were cameras just below the architrave. Tastefully done. Nestling in the natural shadows. But vigilant, nonetheless. Mulch stood for a moment, calculating the system's blind spot. Three cameras on the corridor. 90-second sweep. No way through.
You could ask for help, said a voice in his ear.
Foley, Mulch pointed his wired eyeball at the nearest camera. Can you do anything about those? He whispered. The dwarf heard the sound of a keyboard being manipulated, and suddenly his right eye zoomed like a camera lens.
Handy, breathed Mulch. I've got to get me one of these.
Root's voice crackled through the tiny speaker.
No chance, convict. Government issue. Anyway, what would you do with one in prison? Get a close-up of the other side of your cell?
You're such a charmer, Julius. What's the matter? Are you jealous because I'm succeeding where you failed? Root's foul swearing was drowned out by Foley.
Okay, I got it. Simple video network. Not even digital. I'm going to broadcast a loop of the last 10 seconds to every camera through our dishes. That should give you a few minutes.
Mulch shuffled uncomfortably.
How long will that take? I'm a bit exposed here, you know.
It's already started, replied Foley. So get moving.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Elementary electronics. I've been messing with human surveillance since kindergarten. You'll have to trust me.
I'd rather trust a bunch of humans not to hunt a species to extinction than trust an LEP consultant, thought Mulch. But aloud, he said,
Okay, I'm away. Over and out.
He sneaked down the hall. Even his hands were sneaky, padding the air as if he could somehow make himself lighter. Whatever the centaur did must have worked, because there were no agitated mud people racing down the stairs waving primitive gunpowder weapons.
Stairs. Ah, stairs.
Mulch had a thing for stairs. They were like pre-dug shafts. He found that inevitably the best booty lay at their summit. And what a stairway. Stained oak, with the intricate carvings generally associated with either the 18th century or the obscenely rich. Mulch rubbed his finger along an ornate banister. In this case, probably both. Still, no time to moon about. Stairways did not tend to remain deserted for long, especially during a siege. Who could tell how many bloodthirsty troopers waited behind each door, eager for a fairy head to add to their stuffed trophy wall? Mulch climbed carefully, taking nothing for granted. Even solid oak creaked. He sucked to the borders, avoiding the carpet inlay.
The dwarf knew from conviction number 8 how easy it was to conceal a pressure pad beneath the deep shag of some antique weave. He reached the landing with his head still attached to his shoulders, but there was another problem quite literally brewing. Dwarf digestion, due to its accelerated rate, can be quite explosive. The loosely packed soil on the Fowl estate was very well aerated, and a lot of that air had entered Mulch's tubes along with the soil and minerals. Now the air wanted to get out. Dwarf etiquette dictated that gas be passed while still in the tunnel, but Mulch didn't have much time for manners. Now he regretted not taking a moment to get rid of the gas while he was in the cellar. The problem with dwarf gas was that it couldn't go up, only down. Imagine, if you will, the catastrophic effects of burping while digesting a mouthful of clay. Total system backup. Not a pretty sight. Thus, dwarf anatomy ensured that all gas was passed below, actually aiding in the expulsion of unwanted clay. Of course, there's a simpler way of putting this, but that version can only be read in the adult book. Mulch wrapped his arms around his stomach. He'd better get out of the open. A blowout on a landing like this could take out the windows. He shuffled along the corridor, skipping through the first doorway he encountered. More cameras. Quite a lot of them, in fact. Mulch studied the lenses' sweep. 4 were surveying the general floor space, but another 3 were fixed.
"Foley, you there?" whispered the dwarf.
"No," the typical sarcastic reply. "I have much better things to do than worry about the collapse of civilization as we know it." "Yes, thank you. Don't let my life being in danger interrupt your merriment."
"I'll try not to. I have a challenge for you."
Foley was instantly interested.
"Really? Go on."
Mulch pointed his gaze at the recessed cameras, half hidden in the swirling architrave.
"I need to know where those 3 cameras are pointing. Exactly."
Foley laughed.
"That's not a challenge. Those old video systems emit faint ion beams. Invisible to the naked eye, of course, but not with your iris cam."
The hardware in Mulch's eye flickered and sparked.
"Ow! Sorry. Small charge."
"You could have warned me. I'll give you a big kiss later, you baby. I thought dwarves were tough."
"We are tough. I'll show you just how tough when I get back."
Root's voice interrupted the posturing.
"You won't be showing anyone anything, convict. Except perhaps where the toilet is in your cell. Now what do you see?"
Mulch looked at the room again through his ion-sensitive eye. Each camera was emitting a faint beam, like the last evening sun rays. The rays pooled on a portrait of Artemis Fowl, Sr.
"Not behind the picture. Oh, please."
Mulch placed his ear against the picture glass. Nothing electrical. Not alarmed, then. Just to be sure, he sniffed the frame's edge. No plastic or copper. Wood, steel, and glass. Some lead in the paint. He curled a nail behind the frame and pulled. The picture came away smoothly, hinged on the side. And behind it, a safe.
"It's a safe," said Foley.
"I know that, you idiot. I'm trying to concentrate here. If you want to help, tell me the combination."
"No problem. Oh, by the way, there's another little shot coming. Maybe the big baby would like to suck his thumb for comfort."
"Foley, I'm gonna..."
"Ow!"
"There. That's the X-ray on." Mulch squinted at the safe. It was incredible. He could see right into the works. Tumblers and catches stood out in shadowy relief. He blew on his hairy fingers and twisted the combination dial. In seconds, the safe lay open before him.
"Oh,"
he sounded disappointed.
"What is it?"
"Nothing. Just human currency. Nothing of value."
"Leave it," ordered Root. "Try another room. Get going."
Mulch nodded. Another room. Before his time ran out. But something was niggling at him. If this guy was so clever, why did he put the safe behind a painting? Such a cliche. Totally against form. No, something wasn't right here. They were being duped somehow. Mulch closed the safe, swinging the portrait back into position. It swung smoothly, weightless on the hinges. Weightless. He swung the picture out again and back in.
"Convict, what are you doing?"
"Shut up, Julius. I mean, quiet a moment, Commander." Mulch squinted at the frame's profile, a bit thicker than normal. Quite a bit thicker. Even taking the box frame into account. 5 centimeters. He ran a nail down the heavy cartridge backing and stripped it away to reveal.
Another safe. A smaller one. Custom-made, obviously. Foley, I can't see through this. Lead-lined. You're on your own, burglar boy. Do what you do best.
Typical, muttered Mulch, flattening his ear to the cold steel. He twirled the dial experimentally. Nice action. The clicks were muted by the lead. He would have to concentrate. The upside was that something this thin could only have 3 tumblers at the most. Mulch held his breath and twisted the dial. 1 cog at a time. To the normal ear, even with amplification, the clicks would have seemed uniform. But to Mulch, each cog had a distinctive signature. And when a ratchet caught, it was so loud as to be deafening.
1, he breathed.
Hurried up, convict. Your time is running out.
You interrupted me to tell me that.
I can see now how you made commander, Julius.
Convict, I'm gonna...
But it was no use. Mulch had removed his earpiece, slipping it into his pocket. Now he could devote his full attention to the task in hand.
2?
There was a noise outside, in the hall. Someone was coming. About the size of an elephant, by the sound of it. No doubt this was the man mountain that had made mincemeat of the retrieval squad. Mulch blinked a bead of sweat from his eye.
Concentrate. Concentrate.
The cogs clicked by, millimeter by millimeter. Nothing was catching. The floor seemed to be hopping gently, though he could be imagining it. Click. Click.
Come on. Come on.
His fingers were slick with perspiration, the dial slipping between them. Mulch wiped them on his jerkin.
Now, baby, come on. Talk to me.
Click. Thunk.
Yes!
Mulch twisted the handle. Nothing. Still an obstruction. He ran a fingertip over the metal face. There. A small irregularity, a micro keyhole, too small for your average lockpick. Time for a little trick he'd learned in prison. Quickly, though, his stomach was bubbling like stew in the oven, and the footsteps were getting closer. Selecting a sturdy chin hair, Mulch fed it gently into the tiny hole. When the tip reappeared, he pulled the root from his chin. The hair immediately stiffened, retaining the shape of the lock's interior. Mulch held his breath and twisted. Smooth as a goblin's lie, the lock opened. Beautiful. At moments like these, it was almost worth all the jail time. The kleptomaniac dwarf swung back the little door. Beautiful work. Almost worthy of a fairy forge. Light as a wafer. Inside was a small chamber, and in the chamber was...
Oh, gods above, breathed Mulch.
Then things came to a head rather rapidly. The shock that Mulch had experienced communicated itself to his bowels, and they decided the excess air had got to go. Mulch knew the symptoms, jelly legs, bubbling cramps, wobbly behind. In the seconds remaining to him, he snatched the object from the safe, and, leaning over, he clasped his knees for support. The constrained wind had built itself up to mini-cyclone intensity, and could not be constrained. And so it exited, rather abrasively, blowing open Mulch's bum flap and slamming into the rather large gentleman who had been sneaking up behind him. Artemis was glued to the monitors. This was the time when things traditionally went wrong for kidnappers. The 3rd quarter of operations. Having been successful thus far, the abductors tended to relax, light up a few cigarettes, get chatty with their hostages. Next thing they knew, they were flat on their faces with a dozen guns pointed at the backs of their heads. Not Artemis Fowl. He didn't make mistakes. No doubt the fairies were reviewing the tapes of their first negotiating session, searching for anything that would give them a way in. Well, it was there all right. All they had to do was look. Buried just deep enough to make it look accidental. It was possible that Commander Root would try another ruse. He was a wily one, no doubt about it. One who would not take kindly to being bested by a child. He would bear watching. The mere thought of Root gave Artemis the shivers. He decided to check in again. He inspected the monitors. Juliet was still in the kitchen, scrubbing at the sink, washing the vegetables. Captain Short was on her bunk, quiet as the grave. No more bed banging. Perhaps he'd been wrong about her. Perhaps there was no plan. Butler stood at his post outside Holly's cell. Odd.
He should have been on his rounds by now. Artemis grabbed a walkie-talkie.
Butler!
Roger, this, receiving.
Shouldn't you be on your rounds?